welcome along. There's something weird going on, something missing. Oh, that's it. There's no La Liga game today. What are we going to do? Well, Terry and I are going to try to remember. Try to remember who's played without getting confused and contradicting ourselves for a change. Barca are on the brink. They could clinch La Liga at Espanyol's RCBE Stadium where they resume next weekend. Please, please do it with a 1-0 win. Xavi drove his side to another single goal victory, this time against 10-man Osasuna. If they push on to the end of the season, they get the highest points tally in Spain since 2012-13, back in the heady days when the champion scored 115 goals. People write articles about the great Milan defence of the 90s. Those snowflakes conceded 15 in a 34-match season at their peak. Barca's defensive performance this year has been the equal of anything from the Catenaccio era. Cagliari won the Italian league in 1970, conceding 11 goals, but they only played 30 games. Barca are tighter than that. And Eric Garcia plays for them. They might be champions already by the time they play again, because both Atleti and Real Madrid are up before them. But I guess that won't happen, because Atleti are on perhaps the best ever pointlessly good run of form. You're 15 points clear of fifth and 13 points behind first place, mate. You turned up at your kid's sports day in your running spikes. Now, Simeone is giving it judges over a whole season. We are, mate, including the bad bit when you got knocked out of Europe and gave yourself no chance of winning the league. Come August, you're going to have João Felix back and a new tactics book with 16 different game plans. Elche have gone, weird team, somehow not as bad as 16 points suggests, but they only have 16 points and that's how football works. If only you were allowed to trade in your real points for XG differential points, then Valencia would be seventh and their fans would still be furious. Real Madrid are warming up for the cup final with some advanced talks with Stourbridge's Jude Bellingham, while Barca are preparing an offer for Lionel Messi. Dear Barcelona, please do not try to outbid the Saudis. Have you seen how much petrol costs? There we are. They're all summed up. 30 seconds. Or actually, longer than 30 seconds. I'll tell myself they're 30 seconds long and then I start rambling.
No, you don't.
So where do we start, Terry? Barcelona and their defensive record. We'll probably do this at the end of the season. But I started looking up, you know, because that it's a famous Milan defence. The whole Maldini, Baresi, Costa Curta, Tosotti, all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Barca are better than that. Their record is much better.
It's astonishing. And what's astonishing is Xavi obviously didn't set out this season with a blueprint of this. We're going to be hard to beat. We're going to win lots of games 1-0. And we're going to have the best defence in Europe. That wasn't his remit. And that's what he clearly wasn't setting out to do. And the beginning of the season in particular, they looked really vulnerable defensively. And yet somehow teams weren't taking chances. Somehow Ter Stegen is having the best season of his career and was keeping out those attempts and attacks from the opposition. But as the season has progressed, it's kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy now where you see the Barcelona defenders, Araujo the other night, they've won 1-0. It was a big victory in terms of them winning the title. But you could see him and the other defenders celebrating with Ter Stegen. And you knew what they were celebrating. Another clean sheet. So I think you take on this pride. There's different aspects of football where you feel you take pride in that defensive record. You take pride in your... if you have a particularly good record at attacking set pieces. That is another aspect where it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Once it starts working, then every time you get it, you start to believe you're going to score. And then when you do score those goals, you celebrate because you've worked hard at doing that. So those tiny little things that build up the mentality and the base of a group. And as the season has gone on, because of this sensational defensive record, you can see the back four and you can see the goalkeeper. You can see Busquets counting himself in that group as well. And they take a lot of pride from keeping those clean sheets. They weren't worked too hard against Osasuna. Reserves. They made hard work of the victory. I didn't think it was going to happen. Xavi was chucking everything at it in terms of tactical changes and substitutions and putting on more attacking players. And the Jordi Alba one was slightly weird because Balde was playing well and was probably one of their best attacking players, but it worked. And Jordi Alba does give you something different, I guess. That experience, that knowledge. He didn't have to defend much, so he's playing essentially as a left winger from the left back position. Found himself in the right place at the right time. Good little knockdown from Frankie de Jong, who got himself into the box. And cut across the ball well, didn't he? And hit it towards the near post, caught the goalkeeper out. And it was quite a dull game because Barcelona had most of the ball, but couldn't really create too many clear-cut chances. And then all of a sudden it sprung into life. You could hear the frustration of the crowd. Then it turns into a jubilant night at the Camp Nou for the Barcelona fans, for the players. And at one stage, a lot of stages during that game, I didn't think they were going to get the win. And I thought there was going to be some criticism of this performance because it's a weakened Osasuna team because of the cup final and Barcelona couldn't put them away. Plus, they've been playing for 60 minutes with 10 men and Barcelona still didn't really cause them that many problems. So it was a kind of glossed over a relatively poor performance, to be honest, an anxiety-filled performance. Started off a little bit complacent, I think. The pace was too slow, and then you start to panic when you can't get the goal. And in the second half, there was a degree of panic from Barcelona's performance, and you know, they're anxious to get the win, not only because of winning the title, but because they were playing against a weakened team that were down to 10 men from the 27th minute. So, and then when they get the winner, it was, a night of celebrations in the Camp Nou, and Barcelona move on.
So I think they're on, 82 points, is it, already?
Yes.
And with five games to go. So the last, I think it's five seasons, the champions had 86 or 87 points. So they will be the best champions that we've had for, you know, a considerable period of time. It's just a very different set of champions, isn't it? You know, Napoli won the Italian league. They've conceded 23, second best defence in Europe in the big five leagues. And Barca have conceded less than half. I think we haven't quite collectively got our heads round this defence. I know we are talking about it a bit, but I don't think it's penetrated into the wider football community. If you still say Barcelona, people would still expect an entertaining game. Whereas what we're getting are a series of pretty solid performances and the odd good performance like against Betis chucked in, but This is what they are at the moment, isn't it? This, you know,
and you think of that back four as well that we're talking about is Jules Koundé, who's a centre back, play right back. You got Alejandro Balde, who's been incredible this season. Yeah. It's his breakthrough season, though. The first season he's played as a full time first team regular, first choice player, and then you've got Christensen, Araujo, and Eric Garcia. So at the beginning of the season, Xavi probably wasn't. I think there was a little bit doubt over whether Jordi Alba would be the main player, the main left back, because of his contract situation at the club, because of his salary and because of his earnings, stuff like that. So there was he was always one of those names linked with a possible move away. But you still thought at the beginning of the season that he would be the first choice left back if he stays at the club. And we wasn't sure who was going to be right back. And it's turned into Jules Koundé, who still doesn't look comfortable playing there. But he's a better defensive player than they've had in the past. So we may not get the same impact with Koundé as we do with Balde in terms of the classic Barcelona fullback. But that kind of helps them defensively as well. Christensen, at the start of the season, we didn't think for 1 minute he was going to be as good for Barcelona. He's been really impressive. So if they can, Albert Ferreira on La Liga TV was saying that their first signing should be a right back, other than Messi, he said. Of course, he had to qualify it with that statement. But if they can get a right back, and then you've got the three central defenders in Christensen, Araujo, and Koundé, with Eric Garcia still at the club, who can play as a holding midfielder now. They're in pretty good shape then, but they do need that right back.
So my question is why? I get it. Albert was a fine attacking fullback. Are we going back to one of your old mates, Tony Pulis, for example? Right, I'm comparing Barcelona to Tony Pulis. Big Sam pointing out to everyone that he's he knows as much about football, and Pep Guardiola agreed with him. They're not averse to sticking a centre half as a fullback, and basically saying, you know what, we're not playing with some great attacking. We don't want to play with Dani Alves as our right wing, as our right back. We're happy. Well, Pulis would love Koundé as a right back because he's solid. Or Araujo, even better, because he's solid and 6'2".
And quick. I think that's the difference now with the Barcelona defence. They're all quick. So they can defend higher up the pitch. teams don't think one ball over the dot and we're going to out sprint in the past. Gerard Piqué would be one that would be left at the back on his own, and whoever was alongside him, that gave you a chance with both fullbacks pushing out the pitch, and maybe Busquets was dropping in and alongside Piqué, and then before you know it, one ball over the top and you're in. So Barcelona's defence now can play high. So the recommendation I would make is another fast fullback. Mm. So then you've got four, you always will have four relatively quick defenders. Christensen accepted, probably. But he's not been caught. He's quite willing to defend high up the pitch, probably because he knows that Araujo's covering him. But when a ball goes over the top now, and it's Balde, it's Koundé, it's Araujo, then no one's outrunning them.
Mm-hmm.
So in the past, where that ball over the top, you thought, oh, he's going to run away from Piqué, then all of a sudden, it's Araujo's got a two-yard disadvantage, and he gets across them, and oh. Likewise Koundé, right. Balde.
Next football question for you, then, is if you've got a really fast defensive line, that means you can play higher up the pitch, put more pressure on your opponent, and in theory score more goals, because sometimes a team has a good defensive record but in reality they play defensive football. So yes. Is this Barcelona team playing, because they've only scored 60 goals, which is a, you know, I think they're sort of, in terms of shots, I looked it up, in like 20th in Europe or something, you know, which is, you know, pretty average. So they're not creating many chances. So you, if you looked at it from the outside without looking at their games, you'd think, are they just playing really defensive football then? Is that what explains this record? It's not, though, is it? That's not the story.
No, totally not. I think what they've lacked this season in the attacking third has been that, I mean, Pedro's been missing for a few games. So they've missed him. When he was playing, I think there was an element, he's still finding his way back. He didn't play particularly well against Osasuna. But Pedri was key. So it kind of feels that I look and think, well, where would Messi fit into this? And that's what he brings, that magical pass, you know, the little dribble. What you would lose with Messi is the closing down quickly that Rafinha has been doing, and Lewandowski and Dembele, and then the midfield boys, because they're younger and fitter and sharper than they were. So it's the back four squeezing up. It's Pedri and Gavi. Gavi in particular, running around, closing people down, putting pressure on the ball. But it's what's been missing this season, ironically, is that little bit of magic in the final third, where you do see them slinging in crosses to Lewandowski on too many occasions. And he's outnumbered, he's marked heavily, and it's the quality of the cross isn't particularly great. Rafinha's when he cuts in on his left and whips it in. If he gets the quality right, Lewandowski gets on the end of it. But there's too many which go into the goalkeeper's arms or hit the first defender or go too far and go out beyond the far post. And when you're constantly doing that, then kind of teams know, as he cuts back on his left foot, they can squeeze to the edge of the penalty area and leave that space between them and the goalkeeper and push Lewandowski back towards his own goal, and it's harder to score. So that's the one thing they've lacked. But clearly, I agree with you. I don't think you can accuse them of sitting back defensively this year and thinking, I mean, they don't. I mean, they never drop off. And the other night, I was thinking during the game, and it's hard for Xavi, and he's still learning the role as manager, but I was thinking, why don't they let Osasuna have the ball for a change? So teams hardly ever do this, where you're thinking, right, we're banging our heads against the brick wall here. We're doing this, we're doing that, we're having no success, because they're quite rightly sitting back and defending. And even when they had 11, so actually, let's drop off and let them have the ball and let them come up the pitch a bit more. Draw them out and then hit them on the counter, win the ball back and hit them on the counter-attack. But teams don't do that. You never see that. You never see, they constantly do the same tactic because they feel it's the right thing to do. But I'd love to see that now and then. So a team like Barcelona the other night, I think, well, they've got too many back behind the ball. Let's drop off. Let's let them have the ball. Let them come out. Let them play into midfield. Let them go try and commit 3, 4, 5 players into attacking positions because, oh, they think they might have a chance of scoring. And then we'll hit them on the break.
But the danger with that is the games are the most boring thing ever. Like the Cadiz games in the first couple of seasons when they were up. Yeah. Where it's
12% possession. It was a regular basis as well, and it was consistently that.
And they just wouldn't. They just like, no, don't want it. Just kick it away.
Yeah. But all players it's too tempting.
Yeah.
It's too tempting for the Osasuna players. They had 3 or 4 attacks the other night. And they did try and get players forward. It's too tempting to think, oh, no, this is one of our attacks. I'll go forward. I'll get on it. I'll be the hero. We'll get a famous win at Barcelona. They would. I promise you, they would. The players would lose their heads and lose their heads. Yeah, lose their discipline and think, I can be the hero here. I can score a goal. And then rather than Arrasati shouting at eight of them to stay back behind the ball.
I think one of the features of La Liga is that discipline that teams show. I think that's why, you know, tactical and disciplined, which is not necessarily exciting, is it? I was looking at earlier when I was looking at those stats about the goals, you know, Real Madrid didn't win the league scoring 118 goals in 2015.
Yeah, I know.
And Barcelona didn't win the league scoring 116 goals in 16-17, you know, so, you know, different times.
It is interesting. I have finding this season interesting. Yeah. I have to be honest.
It's a harder sell for the marketers.
Barcelona at the top, Real Madrid with their failure in La Liga, the emergence of Osasuna, and
we haven't Real Madrid's sort of hard. Well, let's get to. I want to ask you about Alemán first, and then we'll get on to how Real Madrid fit into all this. He's the sporting director, manager, the guy who was involved overseeing the transfers. Essentially, is leaving. And weirdly, he's leaving at the end of. You should almost not leave on the same basis as the players, should you? When you're the guy in charge of the transfer strategy, because he's leaving at the end of the season. He's leaving on June the 30th or something, and you think, well, hang on. As we've said before, Barca have got this very complicated season coming up, haven't they? Because of La Liga's rules and their own situation. Do you have any thoughts on it? It's not an ideal situation. I think he's done okay, hasn't he? I think, given that they're going to win the league, and we all thought that they had no money. Well, they had no money, and were still going to win the league.
It depends on what role he had. I mean, it's a suit role, isn't it? I think Jordi Cruyff is the one that was heavily involved in the transfer stuff and player recruitment, and I think Alemán was more the
he was a lawyer, wasn't he, by profession.
I didn't think for one minute. I'm not denying the job he did.
Yeah.
And it needs that type of person involved at a club to push the deals through and to dot the I's, cross the T's. And, you know, especially in Barcelona's case where it's so complicated in bringing players in and out and do the sum. So I kind of think so they're going to need someone to replace him. But I don't think the impact is going to be as much as, say, I think Jordi Cruyff and Xavi can work together and then hopefully someone is there to advise and say, actually, we can't do this deal unless we do this deal first and move this player on. And that's the complicated issue. So it is. I agree with you. I think there should be to June the 30th is a weird time to do it. I mean, it's be interesting to see what role he has at Aston Villa, where he plays there as well. It's a decent story, but I don't think it's anything too dramatic for Barcelona.
Yeah, I guess it's not because they've allowed it to happen at the end of the season, haven't they? So that brings us on to Real Madrid, who were beaten by Real Sociedad. So again, let's do Real Madrid first, and then we'll get on to Real Sociedad's situation. So in terms of this game, Carvajal got a red. So we need to talk about his behaviour around that. Just a brief one, though. We'll do it more at the end of the season, but it's another game where Real Madrid haven't really, they just haven't stepped up in the league, have they? And it's particularly, they're way down on the amount of goals that you would have expected of them. And that's essentially what has made the title race fizzle out, isn't it? Real Madrid have not been up to the job.
Exactly, and Barcelona have shown the consistency needed to win a title, and Real Madrid haven't. You look at some of the games they've dropped points. I mean, this is a tough game away from home against Real Sociedad. I believe there's an element after the Clásico, they realised in La Liga when they lost, that was probably it done. They've had one or two games since then where they might have been able to haul it back, but then I think just recently they've realised that it's done. So the Champions League and the Copa del Rey is huge pressure on them now as well, because they've been, to the extent they're now third, against Atletico Madrid, team who had a disaster in the first 10-15 games of the season. They're now third. They're favourites to win the Copa del Rey, of course, against Osasuna. But that puts pressure on players and the fact they're not going to win the league title. And then the game's against Manchester City. So that they're on the precipice now, aren't they, of if they win the Copa del Rey in the Champions League, brilliant season again.
Yeah.
They can forget what happened in the league, you know, and brush it off and move on and say next year is going to be different. But if they weren't to win the Copa del Rey final against Osasuna and they go out to City, then it's a disaster. So that's why the pressure is really on. They can handle it. The big players can handle it. Ancelotti can handle that type of pressure. They would dearly like to have Modric available. He's not going to be for the Copa del Rey final, probably doubtful for the first leg of the City game. So the pressure is really on them now, and they were outplayed, completely outplayed. And much changed because of the situation in La Liga. They know it's gone now. So it was a much changed team. Mariano Diaz got run out up front. Hazard still didn't get a game, which is astonishing. And Danny Carvajal didn't help when he went gets himself sent off. But Ralph, yeah, they weren't great. The worry would be bad habits are creeping in defensively as well. Militao with the first goal. He's been brilliant up until about four games.
Yeah.
So that's a big surprise. Now he's got to turn the tap and switch back on to get back to his best form, because he's a brilliant central defender. But in the last few games, he's shown that he's been a little bit of a liability. So him and Rudiger together have that potential, to be honest, of a mess up. And they probably Alaba, I think they need him back as well. So it's been a poor run of form for Real Madrid, and now they've heaped pressure on themselves to win at least the Copa del Rey. That probably isn't going to satisfy everybody with Real Madrid if they just win the Copa del Rey this season and end up finishing third in La Liga. Of course, so it's the pressure is on in the Manchester City games. I think most people believe the winner of those games then will probably, you know, go on and win the final as well. So
yeah. It's not guaranteed that, is it? Because, you know, the Milan teams.
Oh, no, the two Milan teams are good, but I would say whoever wins out of City Madrid will be huge favourites.
Yeah, will be favourites, yeah. Yeah. Should they sign Jude Bellingham from Borussia Dortmund? I've been advocating it for a long time, Terry. As a long-time admirer of Bellingham. I think he'd be perfect. Myself, I think.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
100%. And I think he'll gain interest as well in the UK. You know, I'd love to see an Englishman playing for Real Madrid.
Yeah.
I really would again. And I think he's the right player. And they seem to have spent really well in terms of this new policy of buying the younger players. I think Hazard was the last one when they've spent a fortune on in terms of being a certain age.
Yeah.
The rest have all been young or Rudiger for free. And I think this is what they save their money for now. They're not particularly interested in paying the 30, 40 millions for possible players that might be good. They go for the, you know, Camavinga, Tchouameni. They're cherry-picking the one player at a time. Bellingham is going to cost more than those two. But with the age, they it's a good business deal as well. You know, if they're convinced he's the right player, they'll spend the big money and hope that his value will increase over time, because at that age, it's possible.
Yeah.
And at the same time, they get a really good player. So players are out of contract in midfield at Real Madrid. There'll be, you know, one or two, Ceballos and Asensio. I think Ceballos in particular, that will be looking at this and thinking, and Real Madrid will be thinking, you know, if we get Bellingham, we don't need Ceballos. Ceballos is probably thinking he hopes they don't get Bellingham, because then they might keep him because he's had a good season. So there's I'd like to see Bellingham.
Kroos and Modric. Kroos and Modric both stay. One of them stays. Kroos going.
I think Modric wants to. So I believe he will stay. They want him to stay. He wants to stay. So I don't see a problem there. Kroos, I think, is a little bit more uncertain, but I think it's down to him. I think that it's going to be his choice, and it's up in the air. You know, there's been talk of him retiring. There's been talk of him. He may decide that the time is right. I think it depends on the outcome of their season. You know, if they win everything, he might think, well, that's probably six Champions Leagues for him.
Not bad.
I think, is it four with Real Madrid, one with Bayern? It might be a time to move on and try something different, because it was a surprise when he left Bayern. I think he's that type of personality that's not afraid of a new challenge. And he was also is that type of personality that might surprise us all and just go, that's it. You know, I'm done. So I think that's it's his choice. I think if Real Madrid's choice would be to keep him, I think. I still think he's got a lot to offer. But I think and Asensio, I think, is up in the air. Mainly because of him. I think he's got to decide and then, you know, work out a deal with Real Madrid. But Ceballos is the one, if they sign Bellingham, then
yeah,
it wouldn't be wise for him to stay and probably would not wise for Real Madrid to keep him. So it's there's a few up in the air there.
I would still I argue that they've got a couple of gaps in their squad. I would still say you could upgrade right back and Carvajal.
Yep.
Is not at, probably at the elite level now. Not just
he's a weird one, Carvajal. He's at an age where he shouldn't be deteriorating.
Yeah.
He still should be at the top of his game, and when you see him play well, he's the perfect right back for Real Madrid.
Mm.
But those games are becoming few and far between now. Plus the injury issues that he suffers. He does seem to be injured quite a lot. So I agree with you. I think a right back is a big signing for Real Madrid if they can get one. But if they have to choose keeping Carvajal and buying Bellingham, they'll keep Carvajal and make do with Lucas Vasquez as cover or Nacho. So it's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
But I agree with you that there should be question marks about the performances of Danny Carvajal.
Yeah. And then the other one is the centre forward issue that we have discussed before. But you know, Benzema's capacity to turn it on for 50, 60 games, which I think he simply doesn't have. So you've got to find some solution. But we've discussed this before. Can I just ask you about the Carvajal red? So that he was furious because the first yellow that he got was because he brandished an imaginary yellow card.
Yep.
I remember discussing this previously, thinking that's not a bad thing to start booking for, but you can't... It's got to be consistent, hasn't it? You've got to communicate it very clearly to the players, haven't you? If you show an imaginary yellow card, that is a yellow card offence, and make it abundantly clear. But rather like, there was one literally last week, wasn't there, where a player's already got a yellow, and even if the first one was harsh, you can't then clatter into someone once you're on the yellow.
Yeah, it was Edgar Gonzalez.
Yeah.
Betis. Yep, no, I agree. And I'm just thinking about that. We don't see that as much now, the yellow card being waved.
Yeah, people don't like it.
Yeah, and probably there was a time where people did get booked for it. So we don't, reflecting on that, we don't see that as often now, apart from Simeone.
Yeah.
And even he's calmed down. But he still gets booked for it. So, I agree with you. Then he does go crashing into the second challenge. There was enough contact there for it to be another yellow card. So it was self-inflicted, really, because of his actions on the first one and then not wise. I think he makes a genuine attempt to win the ball. And he's an aggressive player, competitive player.
Mm.
But he just mistimed it slightly and caught the player late. And it was always going to be the second yellow.
Yeah.
And that left them with a real uphill battle, to be honest, up against it. Because La Real were awesome, absolutely brilliant in that match. Thoroughly enjoyed watching their performance. Some of the younger players, Garasabo and Ayem Munoz, with both fullbacks, were outstanding. And young players that playing consistently in the first team were improving. And then all the other players, and David Silva was a joy to watch. Oyarzabal was his best performance since his injury. And Soloff absolutely bullied Rüdiger and Militao. When you look at all those things, Taka Kubo played well, you know, Baron Acheo when he comes on. Serious knee injury. A player I've always loved, people on the podcast, I'm sure. I hope I've mentioned him in the past about the potential to be a real top-class footballer. He came on and played well and scored the goal. So Real Sociedad are in a really good place now, position-wise in the table, and their momentum is taking them through. They're playing back to their best again. It's a lovely football club, lovely stadium, lovely team to watch when they're playing well, which hasn't always been the case, but that's to be expected.
Mm.
And you know, massive congratulations to them. They're in a really good position, as I say, and that was a brilliant performance against Real Madrid.
So we've got five games to go. We've got some tricky games to come, actually, Real Sociedad, but they, you know, obviously very strong favourites to get fourth. Atleti are second and playing superb, I mean, just brilliantly. But I was taken aback. Hence, I mentioned it in the intro. But the whole Simeone say, "Oh, judges over the season." Yeah, where we are. the points tally reflects the whole season, and you're not going to win the league, and you got knocked out of Europe because you weren't playing anything like this early in the season. Now, obviously, if he has solved something, if they take this form into next season, you thought, right, okay, they're properly going to contend and, you know, for Europe, and for, you know, for La Liga as well. But I don't want to dismiss a really good run of form, but for them, this is not the business end of the season particularly, is it?
No, their motivation now is to finish above Real Madrid. That's the only title they can win this year. Real Madrid are not too bothered about that, to be honest. For Real Madrid, it's first or nothing. You know, now the focus is on the Copa del Rey and the Champions League. And Atletico, it's astonishing how it's turned around. It really is. And that poor first half of the season cost them massively. They didn't even finish in the Europa League in a position in the Champions League. Finished bottom of their group. It wasn't a particularly strong group. And now you look at it and you know, how they've turned it around, how they've done it. Everyone points to João Félix leaving, and that's going to be a massive issue in the summer because I can't imagine he's staying at Chelsea. He's had four games on the bench now and didn't come on against Arsenal.
Yeah.
And then if because of the failure at Chelsea, which in hindsight was probably the worst place for him to go, who knew when he joined in January that the whole place was going to be shook up from top to bottom, God knows, and now the run of form they're in, and he's not getting a game. So that, unless he were probably open when he first went to Chelsea, things started brightly for him, didn't they? And I remember thinking the first 3 weeks, Atletico have had a result here because I think Chelsea are buying, and they, you know, one of the clubs around Europe, they've got enough money to pay for him and satisfy Atletico and get their money back at the very least, or something like that.
It's not now, is it? They bought too many players like that, Felix. So it's, and you know, even though the Chelsea owner Todd Boehly seems to be very stubborn, you know, he keeps getting whacked in the face with this simple fact, doesn't he? That they bought badly and that they need to change. And the obvious thing is not to buy João Félix.
Exactly. So I don't know what's going to happen to him. I don't think it's purely down to João Félix leaving. It can't be. I mean, he can't have had that much influence. I think it's a culmination of them starting to play better, getting more confidence, Simeone not changing the tactics as much, nowhere near as much. I mean, it was ridiculous, wasn't it? It was like changing tactics every game and five times a game. Mm. There was there's continuity now with the team as well. It seems to be, it suddenly appears to be a smaller group of players. I'm not sure it is, but you don't look at Atleti's team now and think, oh, amazing. Where's he come? You know, it appears to be a smaller, more settled group.
But again, you can point all this at João Félix again, couldn't you? You can say literally taking him out as led, even if you say he's a good player, it's helped the stability of selection, hasn't it? Because he hasn't felt obliged to get this £100 million player in.
And we had Cunha as well. So there were two strikers that left. Yeah. So now you've got Correa, Griezmann, Morata sharing the playing time. And they've all become better and had more of a relationship with each other. But it's astonishing. And they were great in this game. Griezmann, I think, clearly is. When you look at the player of the year in La Liga,
I've got two, and
everyone says and I'm guessing the other one up. We'll see if we agree. And everyone says about the first half of the season, he didn't play. It was six to eight games where he came on after 60 minutes in every game. Then it got resolved. Then his form suffered a little bit before the World Cup. Went off, had a great World Cup, come back, but I think it's 13 goals, 12 assists. No one else is anywhere near him in terms of assists. And everything goes through him now. I think that's been a big key factor in what they've done, because up until this turnaround in form, I didn't know where Griezmann was playing anymore. Was he midfield? Was he up front? Was he out wide? Now everything just goes through him. So I think that's been one of the key factors in this turnaround in form for Atletico. He's become an important player for them, and they've become a better team for it. And Ter Stegen, is that the other one?
Yes.
Yep. I mean, you're looking around the Real Madrid players, and the normal suspects are not there. And you're looking around at the Barcelona players, and they're clearly their player of the year. We're not looking at any player. Lewandowski's got 18 goals, I think, with 19. We're looking at that probably isn't enough to warrant being the star player in La Liga. And then you're looking at a player who's got 13 goals and 12 assists and missed some of the first part of the season, and a goalkeeper who's kept a phenomenal amount of clean sheets. So probably Araujo is the other contender for the other player of the year at Barcelona, I'd say, the way he's performed. But it's in the past, we've had Messi 50 goals, Ronaldo 50 goals, Benzema 40 goals. They've kind of run away with the clear highlight of the season has been those type of players. But this year, it's very different.
So we need to drop down the league and
Maybe
some.
we could make a case for Vinicius, I think,
Right, yeah.
but
But
not to Vini, probably.
realistically, not, I'm going to say, in
Yeah,
that if you felt obliged, because you just end up with a political battle. If you did have some massive online poll, Real Madrid fans obviously wouldn't want to vote for Griezmann or Ter Stegen, so they'd feel
no.
obliged to vote. And I'd say he's been their best player, but
I think Real Madrid's best player this year,
not. I
consistently.
mean, their La Liga. He hasn't transformed. He hasn't single-handedly dragged them into a title race,
No.
Vinicius. Even though he's been good, he hasn't. He
Yeah.
hasn't done that, has he? So, yeah. I think I've got Ter Stegen because it's a 38-game season, and
Yeah.
yeah, I mean, Griezmann is brilliant at the moment, isn't he? Playing as well as anybody, I would say, anywhere. But
Yeah. Switch.
not going to win the league, are you? So,
No.
right, let's drop down the league. Some good games and some big moments as well. Can we go to Getafe? Now, right. So there were what, 35 fouls in this game, seven Getafe players booked, and they won it to an early penalty against Celta Vigo. Now, is all that? Have I just assembled a circumstantial case and are putting them in the dock without any real evidence? From the off in this game, Celta Vigo were tapping their imaginary watches and everything 5 minutes in and stuff. You're thinking, well, so because Bordalás is back, everyone expected it of Getafe.
Yeah.
Did he deliver? He delivered a 1-0 win.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So was
Yeah,
it?
totally.
Yeah.
And Celta are probably the type of team. Celta are a nice, attractive football team, aren't they? Not too
Yeah.
many hatchet men knocking around in midfield, or they can have one or two big players up front if need be. Sven Larsson was in this game. But they're not an aggressive team. So it was kind of a good opponent for Bordalás and Getafe. And they're gonna kick their way. And I don't mean that in a nasty sense. They're gonna be more
In a nice way.
competitive. No, and they're gonna be a lot more competitive than what they have been. I think under Kike Sanchez Flores, they've become a little bit too technical. They were restricted with their style of play. But I think under Bordalás, it's gonna be more direct. It's gonna be the type of play needed for a relegation battle. I didn't see that from Getafe and the Kike Sanchez Flores. I saw a manager who was thinking, "Oh, we'll be all right. We'll be okay." And they're not. I see the irony though in Getafe surviving and Valencia getting relegated. Now, with Bordalás, you look at what he did at Valencia and got the sack. Ninth and Copa del Rey final and got the sack. Now they're look where they are now. So I think that's just the irony we get in football sometimes. And this is a big win for them because it gives them belief. The players that weren't there with Bordalás will start to believe in Bordalás. He has the confidence and arrogance, I think it's fair to say, to know that he genuinely believed he would get them out of trouble. And I think it's a game changer for Getafe. I think under Kike Sanchez Flores, I looked at him and thought, this is a team that's going to get relegated. And when they sacked him and appear to know who they were going to put in charge, at one stage it was a sporting director. I was live on air in Spain on TV when we found out Bordalás was going back, and immediately I thought, this game changer. It'll keep them up. What happens then, I don't know. Whether he stays or whether he's just gone there to enhance his reputation, believes that he's confident enough to believe that he can do it. And then when he does it, then he'll be not, maybe looking around for another job where someone will think, recognize his attributes. He's another one that only can work with the resources that he's got. Even at Valencia, everyone was crying out for a more attractive Valencia team. They didn't spend any money. They had no resources to bring in loads of players for him. And he got the job done. So, you know, it's, I, you know, I'm against that label of, you know, your Sam Allardyces and people like that. They have to work with the resources they've got. They don't have the resources of working for Man City, and Getafe more or less doesn't have the resources of working with, you know, the bigger clubs in the league that can spend money.
And it never gets resolved, that, does it? No one ever gives that sort of manager a budget. I don't think Bordalás ever will. I don't think anyone will ever.
Well, Mendilibar's finally got it, but it's going to be, it might be temporary.
Yeah.
You know, he's suddenly been blessed with working with players, the quality that he hasn't had in the past. He's probably got a headache, Mendilibar, that he's got too many. That's something he's not used to. And you do see chopping and changing of the Sevilla team. I kind of understand it at the moment because of the games are coming thick and fast. But I think if you asked Mendilibar, he likes the quality, but he doesn't like the numbers. And if he was to stay at Sevilla next year, he'd want less players. Because then you get the continuity of playing on a regular basis. You don't have the bombed out squads moaning every day that they're not playing and stuff like that. So it'd be interesting. But I this Getafe result didn't surprise me. It didn't surprise me. They get a penalty in the third minute and then don't concede for the rest of the game.
Yeah,
that doesn't surprise me. So he will bring certain elements to Getafe that I'm not going to be pleased in eye-catching, but they've got a far better chance of staying up now than they did a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, and they, you know, they literally that third minute, they're bombing the ball into the box, aren't they? They're going, getting it forward quickly, getting it wide, whipping it in, all of those things that all you're allowed to do. Obviously, didn't you know?
And you got Enizuno and Boy Mayoral, two of the biggest strikers up front. Why not? You know, it's, and Mayoral was a big investment for the club. Enizuno was a big investment for the club that has flourished in terms of value. And so why not get those, you know, those deliveries into the box? You're down the bottom of the division with a small budget. There's a reason why that you have to play a certain way. And if you've spent all your money on strikers, service them, give them the service. I'm interested now to watch a Getafe game a little bit more than I was a couple of weeks ago now.
Sevilla won that game 3-2 against Espanyol. It was a kick in the guts, wasn't it, for Espanyol, who led for, you know, a fair chunk of the game. They were in front four, weren't they, after, you know, going 2-1 up for 20 odd minutes or something. They're in danger, Espanyol, aren't they now?
Yes.
There's a little gap appearing, and to concede a winning goal late is just a real kick, isn't it?
And it's a kick because they played well and they look like they're improving under Luis Garcia, but the fixture list is tough. And I do see San Puada with a smashing finish. You know, Oselu should have scored as well when he was 3-1-1 versus the keeper. He hasn't missed too many of those this season, so don't want to be too critical. And they're playing better, Espanyol, definitely. But it might be too late. And when you see their running, it is tough. And they deserve something from this game. And just come undone at the end with the slack defending, I have to say. And Papagay got the winning goal. And Brian Hill, was a little bit of a confusing game, wasn't it? The first goals were initially ruled out, weren't they? And then allowed. And I'm still not convinced the Espanyol one should have been allowed, if I'm being honest. Hosselu's offside, but it's Rekic who's forced into intervention to try and stop the ball going to Hosselu, which deflects the ball past his goal. So I get the law of the game is Hosselu didn't touch it, but Rekic wouldn't have touched it if the flag had gone up.
The more recent, when they've been thinking about this clearly in the recent weeks, referees, they've recognised that the ludicrous notion that Hosselu wasn't interfering with play. He obviously was, wasn't he? Because Rekic dives in front of him to try and get to the ball first. But I think what happened, it's almost the confusion of... Sometimes I do think referees fall into this trap of thinking, oh, I've got one. Oh, I'm clever. Aren't I clever? And Rekic thinking, aha, but no. But because look, it was Rekic who touched it and he's the defender, you know, and all of that. And you think, but take a step back. Hosselu's offside anyway, or Hosselu was obviously interfering with play. So and the Brian Hill one was confusing, wasn't it? Because they had to look at that because he was offside, but it came off the defender, and then there might have been a foul on the defender, and all of this kind of stuff, isn't it? So there were long, very long VARs, weren't they? But
And Sevilla now, astonishingly, are in the race for a Conference League place. It's gone. And I might have to go back over a podcast that we did when I said that Sevilla would get 52 points, was it?
I can't remember.
And then I revised it and went, no, they've gone. And then they sack Sampaoli, Mendilibar's coming. And I think they're going to be on schedule. I think I said over 50 points.
Yeah.
And I said quite a while ago, they're not going to go down. They'd won three on the trot, I think. And things looked like they were a bit more sane under Sampaoli. Then it went pear-shaped again. The Knights revise it and think, no, they're not going to get 50 odd points. But they probably will now. And they're in the race for the Conference League, which is ludicrous. And just goes to show how many teams were involved. Maybe not so many now. And maybe one surprise one that's crept back into the relegation race.
Do you mean Girona?
Celta. No, Celta.
All right,
no,
I see.
Celta back in the relegation trouble.
Oh, in the relegation, right. I see what you mean. Yes,
39 points, and you suddenly thought, oh, they're safe.
Yeah.
They couldn't have picked up too many points in the last two or three games, and all of a sudden you're looking and thinking, 5 points?
Yeah.
Bit of work to do. Only one more win needed, probably, but...
You
see how quick you can slide when you suddenly panic and you lose confidence.
Yes. So 5 games ago, how many points have Celtic got in the last 5 games? Well, the win against Elche, so which was that last minute goal by Aidu, wasn't it? So literally, that's at the moment that is keeping them out of trouble, isn't it? That goal, which is
definitely
interesting because let's round up the rest. So, I mentioned Girona because I think and also Betis won at Athletic with a Willian Jose goal. All of which
long throw again. Yeah. That long throw. And I didn't know Miranda had one. Why has it taken so long? When he's picked the ball up and taking the run up, and I thought, oh, this would be pathetic. He's just going to reach the penalty box. Because you do sometimes see players suddenly go, I've got a long throw. No, you haven't. And he launched it into the near post. And there was alarm from the athlete. I think it was Vesca and Danny Vivian. There was alarm. They weren't expecting it. And nor were Betis, because they had Willian Jose at the near post. So he turns, spins, gets the knockdown from Vesca and rifles it home. But where's that long throw been? So even Pellegrini, when it gets desperate, let's chuck a long throw in. You've got a long throw. We've kept it hidden all season. Mm. So week 33.
Been working at it. It's been in the gym.
week 33, we'll suddenly use it. And it was an athletic club. We went, oh, what's going on here? It's a big win for Betis. Much needed. Well deserved. Claudio Bravo is another 40-year-old goalkeeper who was absolutely brilliant. So it was tough on Athletic. They had loads of attempts. Sunset with a volley that had come off the crossbar. And the Williams brothers always looked a threat. It was Paul and Akuku was centre-back, who's a midfielder. Players missing through injury and suspension for Betis, of course, because they've always got players missing through suspension. The only downside was Joaquin didn't get on. After limping off at the weekend, he didn't get on. So I don't think he can break the record now. But it was a risky one to put him on when Pellegrini obviously had to make changes with the game in the balance. He couldn't just use that token one with a minute or so to go. He'd used all 5 subs by then. But that was a big win for Real Betis.
Yeah. So quick mention for Girona. We'll have a chat about Girona at length at some point, but they're basically... Yeah. Well, they're seventh, aren't they? I think they're seventh, aren't they?
And literally a month ago, we're in the relegation battle.
Yeah.
And got on a fantastic run of form. And I've been banging on all season about, I love their attitude. They conceded again for a penalty from Marici, but it doesn't worry them. They're not a team that look to keep clean sheets. They go out to score goals. They're vibrant. They're attacking. They've got some really good players. And I'm absolutely delighted that they're dragged themselves away from the relegation battle and now put themselves on the verge of qualifying for Europe. So, it's been a fantastic season for a newly promoted club again, to be honest. We kind of forgotten they're newly promoted.
Yeah. So, Valencia won, Villarreal won. Nico Jackson's in form, isn't he? He's so lively at the moment, isn't he? And brilliant finish for the goal. Valencia poor first half, picked up a bit, but I don't know. Is that a decent point against a good team?
It probably is, to be honest. But in the context of their season, where they need all points now, it's a disappointment. But I think in general, a game where against Villarreal at home, we're playing well at the moment. As you said, Nico Jackson is looking really impressive. Moreno making a comeback as well, so that was good news for Villarreal. And probably, I think Villarreal should have won it, actually. It looked like exactly as it was, fifth against a team that was struggling against relegation. And Valencia did improve in the second half, but I still thought Villarreal should have won the game, to be honest. So in the context of things, a team that are struggling, playing against a team that are playing well and higher in the league, a point isn't a bad result, but it doesn't really improve their position that much.
An RDT, Raúl de Tomás got a goal, Terry. That's decision making. It has been killer for him, hasn't it, in this season?
Yeah, we can explain this. Last season, he was worth 20 million when he was scoring goals for Espanyol.
Yeah.
And then it all went pear shaped at Espanyol. Fall out with the manager, fall out with the club. Astonishing, they only got 8 million for him when he went to Raya. And when he chose Raya, you thought, well, why has he chose Raya? With all due respect to Raya Vallecano, he was in and around the Spain squad, scoring lots of goals for Espanyol. They turned down offers from bigger clubs than Raya in Spain and abroad. And also now the Blue, he signed for Raya after the transfer window closed. I had to spend half a season, threw away any chance of going to the World Cup, and has struggled to get form and playing time at Raya due to the performances of Sergio Camello, who was on loan from Atletico Madrid. So, and I kind of got a soft spot for Raúl de Tomás. I refuse to call him by the abbreviation. I've got a soft spot for him. I think he gets a rough ride, to be honest. I think in general, I think his attitude I've always liked and when he's been playing on a regular basis. I do think he works hard. But somehow, out of the blue, he got a reputation as being a questionable personality at Espanyol. And I think there was an element of the club wanting that. I didn't see that side of Raúl de Tomás. I've always thought he works hard. I think he's aggressive. I think he's a really good finisher. And if Raúl were getting back on track, this was a classic Raúl de Tomás goal. Great ball into the box. Good, skillful finish with the head. And hopefully in the last few games, he gets more playing time, gets his confidence back. And then Raúl are good enough, as it is already. If they get him back to the Raúl de Tomás we saw at Espanyol, then, you know, they're ninth this season. If, you know, it's a big investment for them. And if he's back to his best next season, it's going to make them an even better team. I think he's a better player than Sergio Camello, who's younger, who's done well this season. But I think a fit Raúl de Tomás playing up front for Raya will add to the strongest team.
I'm not suggesting that we preview the cup final because we're a bit over time, Terry. We spent a lot of time chatting about Spanish football. So we'll save that for the Patreons, or we'll save the cup final and we'll do that for Patreons and we'll give ourselves a Monday off, Terry. I think we're entitled to after how many days in a row have we watched Spanish football?
13 out of 14.
13 out of 14.
I joked when you said there wasn't any on tonight. I thought, what? Oh, surely there must be. There isn't. I don't know. I will watch something else.
Yeah,
I haven't even watched the Premier League. Barely watched any of the Premier League that's going on this week.
No.
I'll catch the results. I don't find it a chore to sit through. It's hard work sometimes with double games games kicking off at the same time.
I quite like that though, when they can show it though, and it's suddenly, you're watching a game and suddenly a goal, because they don't introduce it, do they? Yeah. Just appear out of nowhere, don't they?
Just
suddenly,
fly in.
Oh right, okay.
Yep.
Yeah. But I quite like it. It's good. I like the last day. In, you know, when the goals are, when you know the games are
multi goals
all around and all of that.
Multi-game,
hopefully, I think probably we'll have a relegation battle the last day, won't we? Still,
yes.
So,
and a European battle, so there should be loads of. And the penultimate week, they do tend to play all the same games that matter in a block, don't they? As well, so no, there's plenty still to watch.
Yeah, right. So enjoy the cup final, everybody. UK and Ireland, it's on BT Sport, wherever else you are. I hope you get to watch it. Good luck to Osasuna and to Real Madrid, of course. I don't mind who wins. I would quite like it to be a good game. I'm sure it will be. And for the Patreons, we will come back and have a chat about that. And then we'll see everybody when La Liga resumes again after a much-needed mini break. So we'll see you then. Bye-bye.